But what I'm saying is that this gives us a profile, a nutritional profile, which is the one that our body expects to receive. And if we can emulate that in today's world, then we will be putting the right kind of gas in the tank, as I say to my American audiences. And the good news is, it is perfectly feasible without having to do anything particularly exotic. But we just have to know how to navigate. The final thing I want to say about this food supply was that it would be about 70-75% plant food and about 20-25% animal matter. And it turns out that that ratio is fairly important. But I won't have time to explain why later. So let's look at some of the major issues to do with this specification. The first item on the specification of this food supply is something that when I first started talking about it, again 15 years ago, people hardly knew what I was talking about. But today it's becoming almost a commonplace, and that is that the human food supply should be low glycemic. That is to say, it doesn't give you sharp blood sugar spikes. Our bodies aren't designed for it. Now, in today's world, in the modern Western diet, that's exactly what we have. We have a very high glycemic diet, one which gives sharp blood sugar spikes. Now, why might this be important where cancer is concerned? Well, there's a couple of issues. First of all, cancers feed on blood sugar. When the doctor wants to check up how your cancer's doing, he injects you with glucose, and the cancers light up like a Christmas tree on the x-rays. They've gorged themselves on the sugar. So the first thing to know is, feed yourselves on blood sugar, have high blood sugar levels, you're feeding cancers. But more than that, to control the high blood sugar, the body secretes insulin. And insulin is a powerful hormone which upsets other hormones. Now, when you are eating the way that Sam Bushman is, you don't secrete a lot of insulin because you're not making a lot of blood sugar. Whereas on the Western diet, you're secreting a lot of insulin. Here's an example of what it looks like. So the lower bottom line is the, as it were, the San Bushman or the human Pleistocene level of insulin in the bloodstream. The red line above is what happens when we eat a modern kind of meal. And the difference between the two is hyperinsulinemia or abnormally high insulin level, dangerously unhealthy levels of insulin. So why might this be a problem? As I said, insulin upsets all other kinds of hormones when it's there in excess in ways that the body doesn't know how to handle. I like to think of it like an iceberg. You don't see anything under the surface. You don't feel anything. All you see are perhaps isolated peaks, which you don't realize are connected all by the same thing, this condition of abnormally high insulin. This is what it looks like. It does a number of things. Today, I'm focusing on the cancer. Hey, high insulin levels depress the immune system. They drive a great hole through some of the defenses. So right here, the high glycemic diet is one which depresses the immune system, allowing cancers to flourish. So that is why a high glycemic diet, which is very common in the Western world, is leading us to cancers. The second feature I want to talk about is this. When we looked at those scenery in the savannah area, it was low fat. Okay. The important thing to know is that there were just two kinds of fat that were there all the time. They were there all the time in such a way that our bodies came to depend on them being there. They were essential. Without them, we sicken and die. These are called essential fatty acids. Just two of them. And back in the old days, we used to call them vitamin F1 and vitamin F2. And it's a shame we don't call them that anymore, because that will give you the idea that just small amounts have very powerful effects on the body. In fact, the body turns them into hormones, very powerful hormones called eicosanoids. And they act like Tweedledum and Tweedledee. What one does, the other one undoes. One will increase blood pressure, one will depress blood pressure. One will increase blood clotting, one will increase blood thinning. One will nourish the immune system and one will depress the immune system. Now, back there in our savannah homelands, this kind of seesaw was going on, juggling backwards and forwards the whole time, and everything sorted itself out just fine. But today, in the way we eat today, and this has happened really just in my lifetime, that seesaw has got locked down in one place, so that we're overproducing particular kinds of hormones. And when you overproduce them, the body's getting too much of them, and they are creating mischief. This is what it looks like. So there we have it. The vitamin F1 and F2 are the famous omega-3 and omega-6 oils. It's important that you know these, so let's just run them over. Somebody give me an example of an omega-6 oil. Omega-6 oil. Sunflower oil. Right. Sunflower oil, yes. Another one? Another one? I'll put you out of your misery. There's sunflower oil, yes. Safflower oil, corn oil, peanut oil. Those vegetable oils are definitely omega-6 oils. Well, all right, let's go back. What about the omega-3 oils? Give me some examples of those. Fish oils, right, yeah. Linseed, flaxseed. Yeah, exactly. Anything else? Okay, all right, that's good. All right, so let's get that clear, because this is what it looks like. We're overeating omega-6 oils. Again, this has happened just in my lifetime. These are the sunflower, the peanut, the corn oil, the safflower, and so on. They are in everything. It's what the fast food industry uses for its French fries, for its chips. It's in biscuits, it's in all kinds of processed foods. And there's very little of the omega-3s in the normal food supply, mainly because the manufacturers strip it out. It goes rancid very fast. So the main sources that we get, when you actually think about it, is indeed to eat the oily fish. Flaxseed is one example, too, of a vegetable oil. Omega-3 rich eggs are actually quite a good source. And there is rapeseed oil and hemp seed oil, too. They're not as powerful as the fish oils, which is why they're further down the seesaw. They don't have quite the same effect as overbalancing it. But the net result is that these omega-6 oils are depressing our immune system. They also are driving a coach and horses through some of our defenses. Now, the challenge is not so much to increase the omega-3s. We don't need a lot. A gram a day is enough, so long as there's only a gram a day of the omega-6s. The challenge is to unload those omega-6s out of the diet. And so this is one tip. You know, go home. If you've got sunflower oil in the larder, just throw it straight in the bin. I mean, I can remember the days, I'm sure most of you can remember the days when we used to cook with lard. And they said, oh, we're going to produce these vegetable oils. They're good, aren't they? Well, only in moderation. And really, sunflower oil or safflower oil, any of these, should have a warning label on the side saying this could give you cancer. This is the increase in consumption of vegetable oil just since 1965. It's gone up over 5 times. This is why, one of the reasons why, cancers are becoming more prevalent. It's only part of the jigsaw, but it's all part of a jigsaw that's all pointing all in the same direction. The third thing we saw out there on the savannah was this sand bushman who was skinny. He probably had a body fat percentage around 6 or 7%, maybe a body mass index of 16, 17, something like that. In fact, those figures are off the bottom of the scale of what is normally regarded as a healthy range. And yet everything we know about human health suggests that this is the way to be. And certainly when we're talking about cancers, it's very clear that the fatter you are, the more likely you are to have cancers. There's a couple of reasons. One of them is that fat cells, particularly when they're there in abnormal amounts, when you've got pot bellies and things like this, men particularly suffer from this, It becomes an inflammatory organ. It sends out all kinds of inflammatory chemicals like cytokines, which are part of messing up your immune system. The other side of it is that somebody like that, to have that kind of body fat percentage, you're hungry some of the time. And being hungry is an important part of signals that go to the body, go to the biochemistry. Being hungry causes the body to produce and tune up its immune system. So being hungry is tuning up your immune system, and you need to be doing it two or three times a day. It doesn't mean to say if you starve yourself. It's just that instead of when you start to feel hungry and it's still another hour to go to lunch, you just hang on until it is lunchtime. But this is part of a normal lifestyle which our body recognizes and then is functioning as it should do. The fourth thing I'd like to talk about is this. I mentioned how the women in particular will be bringing back all this plant food. On average, people ate 3 to 4 pounds, the adults, 3 to 4 pounds of plant food a day. And it had particular characteristics. First of all, it was very rich in micronutrients. It wasn't, well, I'm not just talking about vitamins and minerals, I'm talking about all the tens of thousands of wondrous bioflavonoids, phenols, carotenes, all these other compounds which we now know are vital for human health and which nourish the immune system. It expects it to be there. Because it always was in the past, it expects it to be there. And we'll see later that, in fact, we starve our immune systems of some of these micronutrients. Secondly, it was rich in soluble fiber. And thirdly, it had an alkalizing effect on the body. Now, our digestive systems are designed for a high throughput of this kind of volume of plant food. And when it doesn't happen, things don't work as they should do. And in particular, I like to talk about what is a kind of proto or pseudo organ that is in our colon. That is to say, the biomass that is down there. This biomass, under normal circumstances, as nature intended, would be acting as a helper for our bodies. We would have good bacteria down there. And when you have good bacteria down there, they're doing a number of things. For example, they're cross-talking with the immune system cells on the other side of the colon wall in the bloodstream and educating them, teaching them how to become good immune cells which can recognize right from wrong. It's very subtle stuff, this, and a lot of it's very new. And we're still discovering a lot more about all the good things that ought to be happening with the gut or gut bacteria in particular. Secondly, they're producing various compounds like propionic acid, which also gets through into the bloodstream and which our immune system expects to receive as part of its nourishment. It's always coming through and it's designed for it to happen. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't work quite as well as it should do. They also keep the colon wall nice and clean and keep it nice and tight. In other words, it doesn't become too porous. Keep it just the right level. Now, what's happening, particularly with the Western diet, is that we are sending down the wrong kind of residues. We're sending down residues which feed bad bacteria. And these bad bacteria aren't doing the sorts of things the good ones would be doing. They're not cross-talking with the immune system. On the contrary, they want to undermine the immune system. So they're not educating immune system cells. They're not producing compounds like propionic acid to feed the immune system. On the other hand, they're very sneaky. They actually learn how to make the colon wall more porous, leaky, so that they can sneak into the bloodstream. And of course, other opportunistic infections like candida can sneak in as well and create mischief inside our bodies, of course, driving our immune systems crazy, trying to track them down. And finally, these bacteria are what they call sulfanogens. They are sulfur-producing bacteria. They produce compounds like sulfuric acid and hydrogen sulfide. These are highly aggressive, poisonous even, substances. And right here, we have one of the reasons why people suffer from colitis and irritable bowel and Crohn's syndrome and ultimately cancers of the bowel. So right there is that's the fourth item I want to talk about, the importance of the plant food and the volume and the right kind of components of it. There are a number of other issues, but I focused on the main four main ones. We haven't got time to go into them all today. So you might ask yourself, well, when did it all start to go wrong?